From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Maggie Wall. Traditional knowledge will now be included in management plans by the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. Record-breaking temperatures around Alaska are hard on a lot of residents not used to the high temps. But it's even worse for Kuskokwim River salmon, which suffer heart attacks from warm water temperatures. Apparently, salmon don't function well in water temperatures past 70 degrees. While algal blooms are common in many ocean waters, the effects on marine life around the Bering Straits are a recent phenomenon. Scientists and residents in that region look at potential effects on the ecosystem and the marine life caused by algal toxins. All that coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report, right after this.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
For the first time in its more than 40-year history, the North Pacific Fishery Management Council will incorporate traditional knowledge from local communities into its core management plans for the Bering Sea region. Many believe local and traditional knowledge will help the council better manage the complex ecosystem and bring new light to regional issues, such as the changing climate. KNOM's JoJo Phillips has this report.
The NPFMC has developed a new model, the Core Bering Sea Fisheries Ecosystem Plan, consisting of 5 strategic modules. Work has already begun on 2 of them, evaluating the impacts of climate change on fish species and beginning to use traditional knowledge in management of the region. According to NOAA spokesperson Julie Spiegel, the National Marine Fishing Service and the Council, quote, work together to get the most out of our fisheries for food and economic well-being, end quote. Julie Raymond Jacobian, the Social Science Program Director at COARIC, says the results of this cooperation have extensive implications for the entire nation.
The Bering Sea as a whole produces, I believe, 40% of the marine fish consumed in the United States. And the fisheries in the southern Bering Sea are worth over $1 billion every year.
In the past, Raymond Jacobian says it has been difficult for management strategies to simultaneously reflect national interests as well as local subsistence ones.
Yeah, so the North Pacific Fishery Management Council is making lots of decisions, and it has been a challenge in the past to get them to recognize and consider traditional knowledge from our communities in their decision-making.
Raymond Jacobian calls the new Bering Sea Fishing Ecosystem Plan, which acknowledges and incorporates traditional knowledge in its second action module, a really important step forward. But what exactly is traditional knowledge, and what practical applications does it have for fishery management? Raymond Jacobian helped COARIC draft a working definition.
Traditional knowledge is a living body of knowledge which pertains to explaining and understanding the universe and living and acting within it. It is acquired and utilized by indigenous communities and individuals in and through long-term sociocultural, spiritual, and environmental engagement.
She goes on to emphasize it as both deeply rooted in history as well as being adaptable and dynamic, all of which keep it relevant and useful in contemporary life. Currently, the action module regarding traditional knowledge is being built from the ground up, but social scientists already envision ways in which it can be included into management practices, like how to better understand the changing climate. Cultural anthropologist David Holin is the Coastal Community Resilience Specialist for Alaska Sea Grant, a partnership between the University of Alaska Fairbanks and NOAA. He says traditional knowledge can be extrapolated into larger data sets.
If you can understand that change at the local level, you can expand that outwards into gathering information at many different communities. And through doing that, you're able to really see the large-scale scope of what's going on.
Most recently, Holin has witnessed widespread changes in the subsistence practices of walrus hunters. He says regional hunters in the past covered vast areas of pack ice during hunting season.
They used to be able to plan their hunts, you know, a week out or even longer. But today it's you know, they don't know what the ice is going to do from day to day, and it's become very dangerous. And so they're having to actually hunt closer to their communities.
These patterns and activity are fundamental to understanding the immediate effects of climate change on the Bering Sea region and for putting together the management plan. At the same time, Raymond Yacopian points out that traditional knowledge might be the best source for historical climate data.
Traditional knowledge goes back millennia, many generations, and so by working with traditional knowledge holders, we're able to see patterns in climate that may not be visible through other means.
The Bering Sea region will continue to face unique environmental pressures and challenges in the years to come. But Raymond Yacopian believes there is a path forward, hinging on cooperation and trust.
We have a better chance of better outcomes if we're working together, and that these modules are one way for us to do that, I think.
The Council is calling for nominations for the Task Force on Traditional Knowledge through July 31st. Reporting in Nome, I'm JoJo Phillips.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you, in part, by Alaska Boats and Permits. Marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960. Or online at alaskaboat.com.
Earlier this month, as record high temperatures swept Alaska, many people said the heat was killing them. For Kuskokwim salmon, it was actually true. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports, never before seen temperatures in the Kuskokwim River sent salmon into cardiac arrest.
Cynthia Paniak lives in Chivak, and she says this is the hottest summer she can remember so far.
My temperature thermometer outside our house last night, it read close to 100, so like 90-something. But that was when the sun finally directly hit the thermometer.
It's the middle of fishing season, but Paniak is finding that the heat is making it hard to work.
So from 1 to 3 this morning, I smoked my fish.
Rick Toman is a climatologist. He's keeping tabs on the temperature spike in the YK Delta.
Some of the temperatures that we saw, I suspect, are at or near records.
But Bethel's airport thermometer stopped working last week, so it's unclear if temperatures climbed higher than 90 degrees, which would have broken the record set in Bethel back in 1920. Coastal villages like Quinnahock and Chivak did notch high temperatures as well. But Toman says that there's not enough data to see if the heat wave broke records there. And some of those communities only have been recording data since 2013. Back to Chivak, Paniak has dug out her fan and opened her windows to escape the heat. A friend from Colorado called as Alaska's heat wave makes national news.
She called earlier and said that asked about AC. I was like, we live in Alaska. We don't have AC like you.
The weather forecast says the heat wave is probably going to stay in western Alaska for two more days. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Christy Schellenberger in Bethel.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
Algal toxins are not new to Alaska waters, but experts say their presence in low levels throughout marine life in the Bering Straits region has not been seen until recently. During a workshop in Nome, scientists and residents alike discussed the role of algal toxins in the changing Bering Sea ecosystem. KNOM's Davis Hovey reports.
During the algal toxin workshop on Tuesday, participants shared their knowledge about algal blooms and the biotoxins some of them produce. One scientist referenced a study from 2016, which found low levels of these algal toxins in all tested marine species across all regions of Alaska.
We analyzed about 1,000 animals representing 13 species, bowheads, all the different ice seals, otters, walrus, etc.
That's Kathy LeFay with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Warren West Lab. They want to know if algal blooms are harming the marine wildlife populations that subsistence hunters rely on in western Alaska, and if so, how will that affect food security? So far, scientists have some information to say subsistence users are not in immediate danger, but not enough information to answer all of their questions. According to Joe McLaughlin, a state epidemiologist, Not all algal blooms are a threat, but some are deemed as harmful algal blooms, or HABs.
HABs occur when colonies of algae grow out of control while producing toxic or harmful effects on people, fish, shellfish, marine mammals, and birds. Harmful algal blooms do adversely affect ecosystems, the health of animals and humans, as well as potentially affecting the economy with beach closures and shellfish harvest closures.
As McLaughlin said, HABs contain high concentrations of algae that produce natural poisons known as biotoxins. One type of biotoxin that scientists are finding in various animals all over the Bering Sea is saxitoxin. Although some animals are not affected by having saxitoxins present in their bodies, it can be toxic to humans by potentially causing paralytic shellfish poisoning if people consume the infected animals. During the algal toxin workshop in Nome, several scientists spoke about how variable the toxin's concentration can be in different types of animals. Dean Stockwell with UAF's College of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences pointed to various shellfish retaining toxicity for varying periods of time.
Shellfish process all of this differently. A blue mussel can be exposed to a very high level of PSP. 2 weeks later, it's cleaned itself out, and it's happy as a clam. A butter clam can be exposed at the same time. It doesn't release that toxin. It doesn't cleanse itself at the same time rate. So months later, it can still have that toxic load.
According to Stockwell, over the last few years, the Bering Strait has been transporting algal cells from the south to the north at increased rates. He cited research the Japanese vessel Natsuki released in 2017 that shows high concentrations of toxic algal cysts in the sediment of the northern Bering and Chukchi seas. Stockwell says the presence of these cysts could cause more biotoxins to be released into the Bering Strait ecosystem in the near future.
We want to know what those bottom water temperatures are. Because if they start getting above 6 degrees Celsius, these guys can hatch, come back up into the surface, bloom again, put more cysts down, so you can get kind of this now cyclic event of bloom every year, perhaps.
Rick Toman, a climatologist with the Alaska Center for Climate Assessment and Policy, or ACAP, says temperatures in the northern Bering Sea at the end of last week were warming up, getting into the upper 40s and the 50s. According to Toman, this is only one of many conditions needed to have algal blooms.
Other pieces have to fall into place. Just because it's warm does not mean there's going to be. But if the waters were at their historically typical levels, there's much lower risk of that.
According to LaFay, later this summer, a network of researchers will be testing algal blooms' impacts on a variety of marine life across the state as they try to answer many questions related to subsistence populations. Reporting in Nome, I'm Davis Hovey.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Anna Rose MacArthur at KYUK in Bethel, and JoJo Phillips and Davis Hovey at KNOM in Nome. Good luck fishing to everyone, and remember, life vests really do save lives. For KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Maggie Wall.